So I wanted to start our actual exploration of the movement to clarity with a description about intention and mindfulness, and how, in my experience, they can bring a kind of continuity to our experience. As I mentioned, I think it was yesterday, it may have been the night before, in Buddhism, Buddhist psychology, each moment is created by the five aggregates coming together in a certain way, and then the next moment is created by the five aggregates coming together in a certain way. And so in that sense, there is, we call it a mind stream, but it's, there's also a kind of a rising and passing that's felt, that's constant. It doesn't, I still like that term, watching the mind stream, watching how the moments flow and all that, but it's, nonetheless, there is that, I'm sorry, I'm not getting my seat to work. So, what I am suggesting is that intention, when it's with mindfulness, and we could say intention and compassionate mindfulness, create the connecting energies that gives one's life a sense of there being a life there. You know, there's something that's kind of ghostly about life in a certain way. It's like it's in a dream. And I mean, it's in the Dhammapada said that way. And so it's not, this is not a new description or anything. But it, there's a, once we start attuning to it, the lack of a there is starts to be felt and can make us uneasy at times. It can also point to the freedom, but it can make us uneasy. And it, and the idea of, well, what is my life? What is my life about? Where is the meaning in my life? What gives my life coherence? Can naturally arise. And this has been discovered by every kind of philosopher and religious practitioner of all sorts. It's none of, there's nothing new under the sun in that regard. And so what we see is that if we have intention, that's this moment, but we have made as a default position that this intention is going to be the same moment to moment, that we've created, we've cultivated this idea, let's say, of kindness or of non-harming, of telling the truth, of being present, of a joy. Some of you had different ones today, of being clear, of whatever the intention is, it is being renewed because the mind has gotten in the habit of renewing it moment to moment. So intention in this context can form a kind of ground, a contextual ground, just as we can rest the body on earth energetically if we stop hovering energetically or pushing down energetically, which we tend to do. But if we just let the old body be the body and get out of the way, leave it alone, the gravity happens naturally. So that sense of when I, in the morning meditation, when I ask you to let the earth element in the body rest on Mother Earth, I've done this for some years now, and a lot of people report, wow, that really makes a difference. I really feel that. I see a number of nods out there. And so that kind of resting where we're non-interfering, so attention can rest on the breath if we're just being with the breath and we're not interfering. It's a resting. There's a settling back in. It's not pushing and pulling the breath. And thus this last exercise to recognize when we are pushing and pulling it in some way. And then with intention, well, What's my orientation in this moment? I may not know what my goal is in this moment, but I can know my intention in this moment. I may not be able to move towards any of my goals right now in some way, but I can know my intent in terms of how I'm going to meet this moment. Even though it's not towards any of my goals, or this very moment my goal's being thwarted, I'm very clear on what goal I'm wanting to achieve, and it's not happening. So there's still, okay, you're wanting to convince, you know, your company to do something. And at this moment in the meeting, these other people are talking, and you may or may not get your chance to talk. And you may or may not have any effect in your talking. And yet, so therefore that your goals can be felt really thwarted. But then how do you meet this moment when you're feeling your goals thwarted? That's your orientation. Do you see? So what? It's the immediacy of orientation to meeting this moment. Having cultivated a group, a kind of core group of intention, as the person was so saying this morning in such a beautiful way about seeing how he could name them, but they weren't necessarily showing up. And that's going from wise understanding, because when you can name them, that's wise understanding. When you can have the contact made and have continuity of it, that's wise intention. That would be the way I would describe this. By the way, wise understanding is, there's two kind of key teachings about wise understanding. One is wise understanding means that you've realized the Four Noble Truths, which again, everything ties into the Four Noble Truths. And then the other piece of wise understanding is that actions have consequence, that there is karma. And so our whole exploration here, right, is a reflection of those two. Intention, this volitional action of intention, is what creates primarily karma. So it all ties together in this architectural way. So we align to something in our lives that's not based on what we're trying to get, but is aligned on how we want to meet life, that can give our life a sense of coherence, a sense of authenticity. What am I about? Who am I? Well, I'm this person that cares about this and this and this. I have this goal and that goal and all sorts of goals and lots of views and opinions and getting all sorts of moods and all of that. But this is what I'm about. This is the authenticity of the experience of my life. This is what it comes from. My life has coherence because although I'm off over here and I'm off over there, and there's that whole committee inside that we described, which many of you have come to tell me about members of your committee since then. Despite having that committee inside, despite, or including it, if you like, nonetheless, there is this coherence of a life because I have this intention. This becomes a ground in which I stand to meet the moment. It's a kind of groundless ground. I don't want to get off of the paradox of that, but it is groundless ground. But nonetheless, we all stand somewhere to meet any moment of our lives. Pure awareness is not standing anywhere. But in the moment to moment of our lives, there is standing somewhere. This would be a little too esoteric a conversation. But as one gets more and more concentrated, one can take awareness as the object of concentration. And so there is only awareness of awareness. That is, the awareness is both the subject and the object. And happens some frequency. This is not that unusual an experience, but not every day either for even very, very, very experienced meditators. So there's only awareness of awareness. Beyond that, there is a dropping in to awareness. In and there's nobody home. But there's awareness there. There is no subject. There's no object. So there's no subject and no object. It is only when you come out of that mind state that you know that you have been in awareness. And then you can and examine it from reflection, but you cannot reflect in it. There's nobody to reflect. And it's not on anything. That is a very significant experience, and that it creates one of those moments. Going back to the mystery of yesterday. So otherwise, we are standing somewhere as we're experiencing. Do you know what I mean by standing somewhere? There's some perspective that you have. There's some orientation you have to the moment. In the five aggregates, there's contact, vedana, that we worked on yesterday, the pleasant, unpleasant. And then there's perception, and then there's mental formation, primarily that of volition, of intention, and then consciousness itself. That's what makes up a moment. There is some selective process by which we are noticing something. So it's said the shoemaker sees shoes and the dressmaker dresses. If we're desperately looking for someone to be with, we see potential people to be with. If we're looking for opportunities in life, we see opportunities or see where other people have opportunities and we don't, or whatever it is. There's some orientation to the mind in any given moment in ordinary awareness. If that's so, if you can kind of go along with that for this moment, remembering that A.E. Pasico, come see for yourself, and realize, oh, that's probably true in some way. And maybe I don't quite get what he means, but it's true. I certainly have to be oriented. Why am I noticing what I notice? There's all sorts of things that I could notice in this very moment. I could name 100 things that you could notice. You could notice the colors in the room. You could notice the shape in the room. You could notice the different hairstyles in the room. You could notice the feeling of your feet. You could notice what your breath is doing. You could notice what your chest is doing. You can notice how fast your mind's moving, how fast the breath is moving. You can notice how long the breath, right? On and on and on. Every moment. That's all true. So where we stand can add a sense of continuity, a sense of coherence. And what I'm suggesting is that intention, this mindful intention, compassionate mindful intention, is a wonderful way to explore. This is just an exploration. You're not going to go around recreating all this all the time. We're in a kind of retreat here where we're experimenting, going in depth with some of the subtleties of the nature of our practice, of our tradition. And so as we do this, then we start to have certain feeling of being about something. This is a poem by Stanley Kunitz, who was twice the poet laureate of this country. And I think this was written, it was either written when he was 89 or 91, I've forgotten now. And it's called Remembrance, the Layers. I have walked through many lives, some of them my own. We've all had many lives, right? But we've been in so many other people's lives. We've played a role in so many other people's lives. We've been connected to so many people in their lives. And we've certainly been, because of the committee, we've certainly had many different lives and ourselves. I have walked through many lives, some of them my own, and I am not who I was. Nietzsche. And I am not who I was, though some principle of being abides from which I struggle not to stray. That would be your intention. From the time you were a small child, you had certain feelings of what was important to you. Do you remember? Do you remember? I'm really asking you, do you remember? And if you do remember, then maybe it's appropriate, just maybe, to bring that into this time in your life, to have that same loyalty, that same enthusiasm, what that was so spontaneous at that very early, early age. I have walked through many lives, some of them my own, and I am not who I was, though some principle of being abides from which I struggle not to stray. When I look behind, as I am compelled to look before I can gather strength to proceed on my journey, I see the milestones dwindling towards the horizon and the slow fires trailing from the abandoned campsites over which scavenger angels wheel on heavy wings. Over which scavenger angels wheel on heavy wings. Oh, I have made myself a tribe out of my true affections. You've made yourself a tribe out of those you've loved, those you've really cared for. No matter if they've gone, no matter if they've recently gone in a way that broke your heart for another because they died. No matter, you don't lose your tribe unless you choose to lose your tribe. You're not dependent on their actions or even on their state of aliveness. Oh, I have made myself a tribe out of my true affections, and my tribe is scattered. How shall the heart be reconciled to its feast of losses? How shall the heart be reconciled to its feast of losses? This is dukkha, right? This is dukkha. How shall the heart be reconciled to its feast of losses? In a rising wind, the manic dust of my friends, those who fell along the way, bitterly stings my face. Samsara. Yet I turn, exulting somewhat, with my will intact to go wherever I need to go. And every stone, difficulty, and every stone on the road, precious to me. Yet I turn, exulting somewhat, with my will intact to go wherever I need to go, and every stone on the road, precious to me. In my darkest night, when the moon was covered, and I roamed through wreckage, in my darkest night, we know those dark nights, right? And we all have these dark nights. These dark nights are part of the journey of life. Whether you have any spiritual attitude or not, you're not exempt from those dark nights. In my darkest night, when the moon was covered, no light. Remember, we started with Jung about that the human psyche was this light in the darkness. In my darkest night, when the moon was covered, and I roamed through wreckage, a nimbus clouded voice directed me, live in the layers. Live in the layers, not on the litter. Though I lack the art to decipher it, no doubt the next chapter in my book of transformations is already written. I am not done with my changes. And the elder part of his life, this willingness to meet life, to acknowledge the losses, and having had a realization, an insight, to live in the layers, not on the litter. Oh, this has been lost, that's lost, here's this regret, here's that wanting. How easy it is to live on the litter in our lives. But rather, to have this intention is to connect to some principle of being that abides, from which you struggle not to stray. That principle of being, as I am reading this and bringing it to our attention, this could be read in other ways, of course. But for our purposes, that intention from which we struggle not to stray. Can you feel how magnificent this life is? Wouldn't every life be equally magnificent, lived in that way? And not necessarily every life is of the same size as measured by this, the heroic size and society and all that. It's not true. But that's such a very small measurement. When in the Divine Comedy, Dante has gone down with Virgil through all the realms of hell, and he climbs out, and Virgil can't go with him any further, and the Beatrice, we could call it his inner feminine, or whatever you want to call it, this young woman he'd known when he was a boy, that she was just a young girl, and he idealized her. She was an ideal image inside. And so she was now accompanying him to these realms of heaven. And when he gets to the realms of heaven, what he is most amazed at is not the splendor alone of these different realms, but how at whatever realm a person is, that where there's this being in this realm, this being in this realm, there is no jealousy, there's no wanting more. That each one realm is more splendid than the other, and yet each is content at the realm they are. I find this such a Buddhist description of real awakening, because as I mentioned yesterday, in the Buddhist cosmology, there's a realm of the jealous gods where there's not that kind of peace. So in our lives, are we going to perfect that? No. But can it be some principle from which we strive not to stray, where we strive to abide in this, that this is our intention of kindness, or our intention of not causing harm, our intention of being truthful, our intention of being available to serve, whatever matters, of being awake, to learn, whatever it is we're mostly about, that we are staying true to that core sense of what we're about. Is that not possible? This is a poem by William Stafford. It's called The Way It Is. There is a thread you follow. It goes among things that change. There is a thread you follow. It goes among things that change. But it doesn't change. People wonder about what you're pursuing. You have to explain about the thread. But it is hard for others to see. While you hold it, you can't get lost. Tragedies happen. People get hurt or die. And you suffer and get old. Nothing you do can stop time's unfolding. You don't ever let go of the thread. This continuity of what we're about, the continuity of the Eightfold Path, the intention to walk the Eightfold Path, mindfulness of what? Of intention. What intention? The intention to be on the Eightfold Path as best I am able. This is the Dharma journey. It's one way, emotionally, of feeling the Dharma journey. It's one way of having the Dharma journey be the ground through the many different aspects of your life. The many different aspects. We all play so many roles, you know. We have on this hat and that hat, and you know, we're parent and child and friend and customer and client and service person and on and on and on and on. And through all of those different things, this thread, this continuity of our intention. Intention of what? To move towards freedom, to move towards the end of suffering. We have an orientation. We have an orientation. That's our orientation. A poem by Carl Dennis. This is just an excerpt of this poem. If there is no spirit unfolding itself in history, if there is no spirit unfolding itself in history, no gradual growth of consciousness beneath the land grabs and forced migrations, the bought elections, the betrayal of trust by party faction in the name of progress. What about spirit in the personal realm, unfolding slowly inside us, so slowly that our best days seem like a holding action? Seasons repeat themselves, but the tree shading the yard keeps growing. Cyclical nature of life, but the tree and the yard keeps growing. Those rings of experience keep going out. Our development, our movement towards. It's so easy to have a hidden kind of cynicism. Like you hear, oh, he's talking about an intentional life. Yeah, some sort of concept, or that's just, it's a bunch of words, or it's, it doesn't apply to me, or what. It's hard to say, well, what does that mean? Because I've been so specific about what it means in every facet of your life. You can't quite say that. But it's so easy to not really show up in our lives. It's easy for me not to show up in my life, you know. And so I remind myself that starting the day with clarity is where I first do that. I start the day with clarity. I am very interested in the difference between what's being perceived and the story. I know to my very toes how easily I can make a story out of what I'm experiencing that's not anything but a story. This experience is definitely happening on some level, but how I am interpreting it, how I am perceiving it, so susceptible to my needs, to my moods, to those around me, to what someone else is telling me it means. You know, it's so easy to do that. Where does one rest? Where does one stand to understand one's own heart's experience? Where does one stand to understand one's own heart's experience? That is the thread. This is a quote from Steve Jobs. He was given the address at Stanford after he knew about his condition. Did not tell the world, I don't think, at that point. Remembering that I'll be dead soon is the most important tool I've ever encountered to help me make the big choices in life. Because almost everything, all external expectations, all pride, all fear of embarrassment or failure, these things just fall away in the face of death, leaving only what is truly important. Remembering that you're going to die is the best way I know to avoid the trap of thinking you have something to lose. The trap of thinking you have something to lose. You are already naked. There's no reason not to follow your heart. The trouble with the language of following your heart is that it can so easily turn into following what's pleasant. Right? It can so easily fall into nourishing my little story along, right? My little story that I cling to, that I hold on to, and which I'm at the center of that story, you know? Thus, I point again and again to intention, because intention's not about us. It's about what is to be manifest. It's a movement away from that extreme self-referencing that can so plague us. And plague us even when there's nothing seemingly in it for us. You know, our lives can be such a mess that why in the world would we want to be self-referenced, you know? There's so much hopelessness or so much bad news is happening. Why would we ever choose to be focused on us? Yeah, this is not the time to do that. And yet we're even more focused. And so to develop something that has a neutrality to it, that's not self-referenced, that's not dependent on conditions, this is what we're learning to do. We're learning how to develop a set of life skills that allow us to meet this moment regardless of the conditions of this moment. That's probably the 50th time I've said that to you in one way or the other. So we're so glad this day's over. I would happily say it another 50 to myself as well, only maybe 500 for me. Because I really don't want to waste this. I really don't want to waste this life. You know, and I was very conscious of that earlier than most people, maybe. But I was very conscious of it even in my 20s, that I did not want to waste this life. And it was not clear to me what to do with it. You know, what is not wasting it? And I actually have lists of all the things that can give life meaning. And I've started working on those lists in my 20s. I'd make a list. This can give life meaning. This can give life meaning. You know, all the possibilities and exploring it. Not as some big philosophy project like I was doing my dissertation. But no, what am I going to do? I've got these few precious years. These relatively few precious hours, you know. There's not that many. What am I going to do with it? What gives life meaning and under as wide a set of possibilities as possible? And in finding the Dharma, that's what I found for myself. It may not be true for you that gave my life this meaning. So I think that's... There's one other one, but I don't seem to have it with me. So we're going to now. I'm still trying to catch on to Seattle weather. Give it up. All right. Because I look outside this one and I go, oh, well, maybe we could do walking meditation. I look out this one and I go, no way. So we'll do a little exercise and then I'm going to do a guided movement exercise for us rather than walking. And then rather than having you walk a question, I'm going to ask you to once again go into a dyad and do a repeating question. How many people in the room have ever done repeating questions in dyads? About 25% of the room, okay. I realize that in doing these dyads, in one sense it gets a bit seminar rather than just sitting on retreat. But when we're in a non-residential retreat anyway, and you know, I don't have very many opportunities to be with you, and so to use every skill set that I know of to try to help us is part of my motivation. I keep making these references to what I'm doing and why and what my goals are and so forth, because I have come to value that in community, that people be very clear on their goals, that people be as transparent as possible in what they're doing as they're doing it. We did a major revisioning as to what Spirit Rock, the meditation center that's my home, is about and how it's to be held about 3 years ago now. And we created these six operating principles, which you can go onto the website and find these operating principles. And one of them is transparency. So we wish to operate our organization with as much transparency as is appropriate. And one of the staff members has recently been saying, well, you know, really it's transparency or translucence, because you want to let the light in, but certain things, like dealing with one of us, there are things we don't want you to say to the whole community about us, but we the light into the process, yes. And so this transparency. And another one was being Dharma-centric, that we were going to govern the organization as a Dharma practice. That one form of practicing Dharma is how you govern yourself. And it's just practice. So it's not primarily getting the job done. It's primarily practice. And in doing the practice, the job gets done. So the act of governing as mindfulness practice, compassionate mindfulness practice, with the purpose of ending suffering. So very interesting to see the effect of this over this period.